This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. In our Health and Living segment, we have covered this topic of cerebral palsy in many shows, actually, looking at various aspects, an orthopedic aspect to just general living aspects of people with cerebral palsy. But for the longest time, children with cerebral palsy were referred to as spastic. While this term has medical origins, it has also taken on a derogatory meaning. And as a result, cerebral palsy, or something we call CP, is still misunderstood by many. So in the studio with me, Dr. Chen Pei Ming, a rehabilitation physician from the Cheras Rehabilitation Hospital. She's going to be here to explain this condition amongst the children. Joining me also is Sarini Bujang. She's going to share her experience and challenges in bringing up a child with CP. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are you today?
Good, good. Thank you for inviting us.
You are most welcome. Dr. Chen, you just want to tell me a little bit more about the Cheras Rehabilitation Hospital, because a lot of us didn't know it existed. I had no idea. I had to Google it and I found out that it's a government initiative. Tell me more.
Cheras Rehabilitation Hospital is actually a hospital under the Ministry of Health. So it's basically a government hospital. It's the first and only standalone rehabilitation hospital in Malaysia. He has started his operational in July 2012, and has been nearly like, I've been working there for nearly 5 years already.
So, what got you interested in rehabilitation as a doctor, actually? And now you've, you know, even gone deeper. It's more pediatric rehab, really.
Being a doctor is always like in the front part, and then you see, you save lives, and you don't know what happened to them after they go out from hospital. And when you see people that having a stroke, and later on you don't know what happened to them, and when they come back, you're all contractures, it makes you think that you want to do something for them. So that is why it caused me to go into rehab. And it's actually like a flip of coin. The other side of the coin of health of a patient, of a person that has a disability. What rehab medicine do mainly is to look at the functional status of a person, to assess it, the ability to function, and then find what is the gap for them to be able to be independent as much as possible. And then we fill up the gaps in between. It's sort of a teamwork. And you really need to be in it to really feel it. Like, it's not glamour. It's not like you save life, but we look into more into the quality of life of a person after the life being saved.
Right. Satisfaction from that.
Yeah.
So you want to just go through with us very quickly. What is cerebral palsy?
Okay. Cerebral palsy is actually a physical disability that affects the movement and posture of a kid or a person. And it's the most common physical disability in childhood. It's the incidence worldwide is 2 per 1,000 live birth. So in Malaysia, based on a population of 23 million, the extrapolated incidence is like 47,000 a year.
And that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. So it's actually an umbrella term. It's not a diagnosis per se. It's an umbrella term that refers to a group of disorder affecting a person's ability to move. That's the movement. Move the body, the motor control, how to speak, how to swallow, how they sit, the tone. It's actually due to the damage to the developing brain. The keyword is developing brain. That means that the brain that is not mature yet. So basically it's like before age of 3, and then it always happens during the pregnancy or soon after the pregnancy, so after the birth delivery. People have cerebral palsy, may have other associated symptoms like the visual, the hearing, epilepsy, the speech, and also intellectual impairments. Cerebral palsy is actually a lifelong, it's a permanent condition. The insult to the brain is permanent. But the features, the clinical features, the presentations is ever-changing.
Is it a spectrum, as in how it affects movement?
It can be very mild that you don't really think about it. Maybe you just like a bit like walking tiptoe to a very severe one. It's very stiff, cannot move, that you need 24 hours of care. So it's like, and then many in-betweens. And then there's a lot of combination with other impairments. So you will not find a one that is like the other one.
Is it hereditary? As it, does it pass down from one generation to another?
No, not really. The cause of the CP is still, most of the time, is still unknown.
Okay. Sarini, you want to share with us? You have Hannah, who was had cerebral palsy from the time she was born. You want to share that journey with us? How did how was Hannah diagnosed with CP? And, you know, how, what's it been like?
Hannah was born in 2005, so she will be 13 this coming June. How she was diagnosed was after her birth. We were not sure what happened during the birth. But what happened was she was initially diagnosed with hypotonia, meningitis, and also septicemia and hypoglycemia. Those are all indicative of blood poisoning. So we're not sure how she got that. And then after which we decided to seek medical help in terms of diagnosing her at various hospitals. But at the end of the that journey, she was diagnosed with the umbrella term cerebral palsy. Essentially, she has no diagnosis technically, but with the umbrella term cerebral palsy because of her physical limitations.
The movement problems.
The movement, yeah.
Okay, so essentially you really don't know what happened.
Yes.
But she's now got movement issues.
Yes.
Okay, and so how did you get help? How was she diagnosed?
She was diagnosed after a series of blood tests and also they call it metabolic tests as well as blood tests. At a government hospital. I still remember she was, there were 16 vials of blood being taken from her.
Tiny baby?
Yes, when she was a baby. Oh. And that continued on till, I think she was, until she was 6 years old, because she also had epilepsy at that moment. So she went through a lot of tests. She went through EEG, was it? Mm-hmm. The one with a lot of wires.
Brain activities.
To check the brain activity and her sleep activity. But at the end of that, they did not come up. I mean, we did not come up with any diagnosis. It was thought to be genetic, but stress already.
Yes, I can imagine. I can imagine.
So she was, the last bit of test was actually a spinal tap, which I did not agree to. So we did not go through with that one. To finally diagnose, because it was just a diagnosis instead of having a cure. Do you get what I mean?
Yes.
So I would rather, if the spinal tap has some form of cure together with it, then yeah, it would be worth the risk.
Dr. Chen, what would the spinal tap actually tell you?
No, it depends on what they want to check, because when she got the 16 miles of blood taken, it actually wants to see whether got any metabolic diseases, which are degenerative diseases, and some of it actually have some cure and treatment for it. So the spinal tap most likely is for to lower any meningitis or any virals.
If you had found that it was meningitis and it had a viral effect on the brain, that wouldn't change how you manage her movement problems?
No, not really.
So it wouldn't have told you very much either.
Yes.
So Hannah is now 13 years old. How did she develop from there? As a child?
When she was a baby, she was fed through a tube, through her nose. I think it's called a G-tube. And I couldn't bear looking at her drinking milk from that tube, because she would always choke on her milk. And she was totally hypotonic. In terms of her muscle tone, is very low muscle tone. Usually, cerebral palsy kids have very spastic.
Very high tone? High or tone. Very low tone. Some of them perhaps.
Yeah. Hers is the other way.
Very strong or weak muscles. Okay.
Yeah. So hers is very weak muscle tone. And so when she was born and when she was being fed, it was like feeding a rag doll, because she just had no control of her neck or whatever, you know. And her mouth. So then I couldn't stand looking at her feeding from the G-tube. And so I decided to seek for oral facial therapy. Mm-hmm. We went to a doctor who actually did the oral facial therapy. I think when she was in her third month, she could feed on her own, but really slowly, like maybe 5 ml of milk at a time. Mm-hmm. and you just have to be really patient in
persevering
mm-hmm. to feed her. And then from then on, she started taking weekly physical therapy. At first in a private hospital, and then I mean we switched back and forth from private to government to private again. She has tremendously progressed from then on, from being like a rag doll. Now that she's 13, she's starting to take her first steps.
Wow. Fantastic.
Yes.
And just persevering with physiotherapy and
all the other therapies,
right.
Hydro. And we seeked, we sought alternative forms of therapies as well. She went for acupuncture. She went for aromatherapy, homeopathy, all that, you know. Like wherever we hear of a place which can potentially help with her condition, we would go.
So you sacrificed really just about everything for her. To make sure that she got the best up to the age of 13. And despite and all in the midst of all of this, you had two other children. You have two other children.
Yes,
now.
I do.
They're 8 and 4 years old now.
Yes.
Okay, and how did you manage it all?
Well, she and her two sisters, Hani and Sumaya, they're actually from a different father.
Okay.
So in between that, all of that is like, there's the, you know, the personal family issues and stuff like that. I think a support system is necessary in order to manage everything. Initially, I didn't have one, actually. I had to build one. So I'm thankful that I found a good caregiver for Hannah. And she was 1 year old. And I eventually quit work as a systems engineer. I was an engineer. It takes... You have to build that support system as you go along. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of like seek help as much as possible. You know, a lot of the times, even normal moms, they kind of like want to be super moms, but you just need to seek help, really. Yeah. You just need to ask for it.
You said you left your job. Financially, how did you manage?
At first, it was really hard. It was really hard. I had to sell off my house, sold off our cars and switched to a smaller car, things like that. A lot of lifestyle changes. Of course, I will lie if I say it did not come with heartache, you know, because a lifestyle change as radical as that mm-hmm. is going to be impacting the family.
And relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yes, really. And so whether we like it or not, there are a lot of sacrifices to be made and a lot of adjustments as well. So that's one of the reasons I homeschool my other two kids because mm-hmm. it's just easier on us schedule-wise. It's also easy on the pocket.
Of course.
And eventually, I looked for various home type of business. And then, you know, you just adjust your life accordingly as you go along.
We'll come back and find out more about Sarini and how, you know, she brought up 13-year-old Hannah who has cerebral palsy. Also with us, Dr. Chin Pei Ming, a rehab physician from the Churras Rehabilitation Hospital. We'll come back and find out more about what rehab really entails and, you know, the whole emotional and support system that Sarini is actually referring to when you do have a child with CP. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Mira Sivasodhi, Dr. Chen Pei Ming, a rehab physician at the Churras Rehabilitation Hospital, together with Sarini Bujang, a mother of 13-year-old Hannah, who has cerebral palsy. Now, if, as Dr. Chen has explained to us, CP is actually an umbrella term. It sort of affects anybody, or it's an umbrella term used to describe people or somebody who has disability to move. So it's it's usually caused by damage to a developing brain anytime up to the age of 3 years old, as Dr. Chen has mentioned earlier. Now, at the Cheras Rehab Hospital, what do you actually do? So if today I'm listening and I have a child with CP, can we all come to the Cheras Rehab Hospital, and how does it function from there?
The hospital is a specialized tertiary hospital, so it would need a referral letter. We would appreciate a most comprehensive letter that we do hope, every doctors will hope to get. Because child with CP, as what Sabrina has said, is that she has gone through a lot of therapies, yep, and then being healed and then a diagnosis and then going for the blood tests and things like that. We don't want to repeat that. So if you can give us as much possible of information, then it will give us a better idea of what we can offer to help. Normally, the first time is that you get a referral letters from a specialist, okay, or a government doctor with what is the indication that you want us to help for first. With all the medication list, with what other comorbidities, because it will help us to plan. And then afterward, you got an appointment to see in the clinic. We will have a look at you, have a chat with you, the case, and then looking at how it goes, what type of therapies has gone through, and what is the ability now, and what is able to do. Because for me, working in the medical field for more than 20 years, it's like, you know, it's a hassle to find a parking in hospital.
Of course.
And then
anywhere, really.
Yes, it's. And then you have a kid. No, not to say, for me, per se, to find a parking space in a hospital is also a headache. It's also a very headache and a very stressful experience.
Yep.
By the time I go to the clinic schedule, I need to have a long wait and things like that. You can imagine a small kid, whether it's a big or small, will be okay to wait. By the time you see a therapist or you see a doctor, you'd be cranky already. I'm hungry. I'm actually like, it's like you say, why are all those people asking the same question again, yep, and again? So what we normally do is we will have advice for admission. A kid's who, I think an adult also will not tell you, hi, I'm who and who, and tell you the life story and the first visit, isn't it?
Yep.
So we normally would advise for admission, basically to build up rapport and have a chance for the whole team, the therapist team and the doctor, to have a know about more about the kids or the family members' dynamics, so that we know what exactly the child able to do instead of one-off. We have kids that, this is not just CP, that came into the clinic and have a tantrum, rolling on the floor for 1 hour. So what to do? We expect that we can refer for outpatient therapy 1 hour. If you go for a private, 150 ringgit, it's just gone off like that for 1 hour throwing tantrum. Then, but amazingly, when she went into the ward for admission to observe her behavior, she was perfectly well. I said, and all of us was wondering, why we admit her? For the first day. But after 2 or 3 weeks of admission, normally we have to know the ability of the kids, what has been taught, what is the aim that we want to have, what is the therapy goals. Then we have a discussion amongst the therapists, the physicians, and the parents, and the child, if the child is able to understand. We need the cooperation of the child, especially those teenagers. Whatever we say now, nowadays, they don't want to follow, they don't want to follow. Whatever best you want to do. So we have an identified a goal that is achievable. Because once you achieve a goal, then you go for next step. Then we plan whether we're going for another intensive or inpatient to give a boost, or we can go for outpatient, or we just maintain at this moment. And then if we are unable to accept because of the high demand, we will actually tell them where to go later on.
Is it ever too late to come for rehab?
No.
So you mentioned teenagers. I'm always assuming that, you know, you should seek help earlier on,
yeah, of course,
to ensure, you know, better success. I mean, 13 years, Hannah has, you know, taken her first step, which is fantastic. But you've been persevering, Sorini, from the time Hannah was a baby.
Yeah.
But just say coming in at 13 or 14, I mean, how do you manage a patient like that?
It's never too late. And that will always depends on what your goals. Just for example, we have a kid from Johor. I saw him again. I saw him at 2 years old. I saw him again at 12. Because as a government servant, we shifted from hospital.
Yes.
And then I saw him again when he's 12. We persuaded the mother. He's fully dependent on caregivers. he is fully dependent. So my father and mom, because mom is a teacher, so we actually advise for a long school holiday to admitted, only with one aim, feeding. Hold the spoon and feed himself. At the end of the 6 week, it's not perfect, but he's able to do. And then he practiced the skill at home. 3 months later, in the clinic review, the mom is asking me, "Doctor, can I book the year-end admission?" Why? Because last time when persuading him to go in, the mom is very, very reluctant. I said, "Why?" He can feed himself now, and then he's capable to sit with the whole family to have dinner. That is something, just something very small.
Huge milestone.
Yes. Then the next admission, we focus just on dressing upper garment. That means that the T-shirt, he achieved it. The subsequent year, we go for lower garment. And at this moment, he can get in and out of his wheelchair by himself with minimum help from the caregiver. So it takes a long time, and then you just need to prioritize. And the goals and the aims, it all depends on, we analyze, we discuss what is relevant to the family, to the kid. You need to, children with disability doesn't mean that they cannot do anything. They can. You just need to show them that they can do something, and then they strive for it. And the action need to be meaningful. The training, the practicing to be meaningful. Just for example, I don't really cook. You train me to do cooking. Will I going to practice it? So there are things that we need to take into consideration. Like, we try to teach the kids to go for stair climbing. The house got no stairs.
So there goes the practice. Right?
Yeah. So that's basically. Okay. But you just need to identify a goal. And maybe sometimes the tasks need to break down into many steps before you can achieve. And then you just have a lot of discussion with the family members.
Sarini, what are some of the misconceptions about people living with CP?
Many. Well, for starters,
I didn't know it was an umbrella term.
It was an umbrella term. Yeah, that's number one. People always think that it's a diagnosis, but yes, it's not. And people who are not familiar with how they act with the condition always think that it's transferable. So they kind of like not want to go near Hana because, you know, they think that
they
might
contract something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's one. And there's another one. People think that the condition, yes, the condition is lifelong, but a lot of the times when I meet other parents with CP, they think that the child is, we can't enrich the child's life. And so they're kept at home, doing mostly nothing. And that's a lot of the time, kids with CP, emotionally inside and cognitively, they are like a, like any other kid who wants to make friends, who wants to be out there in the world and experience stuff. So for Hana, I always try to include her in everything, in all the sisters' activities, in family outings and stuff like that.
Emotionally, she's 13 now. She's going to go through puberty and all of that. How are you managing that?
Yes.
We all struggle with that.
Well, a lot of explanation needs to be...
A lot of talking.
A lot of talking, conversations with Hana herself. A lot of conversations with her sisters as well. And really just getting her exposed to how the world really is, and not sheltering her, is my motto for her. It's really... the more she is exposed to what the world really is, as opposed to what she can or cannot do, is really the key to manage.
So you're just going to take it one day at a time?
Yes, so far, one day at a time. We do have plans for all of our children. But yeah, it is really something that she is really leading us into what she needs. Yeah.
I'm very curious, and I have to ask. You don't have to answer this question, but
no worries.
What was it like going into the new family, the new relationship with Hannah? You know, I have to say, you know, if you've come this far, your partner was something else altogether.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
I'm really thankful for him that he has accepted Hannah unconditionally, and. Okay, I'm trying not to cry.
Feel free to cry.
I was it was just me and Hannah for about 3 years before I met him, and he has been very willing to accept Hannah as she is, and also to accept all the things that come with her. You know, her frequent therapy sessions. Her tantrums at home, you know, and her dependency on others. Not everyone can accept that, actually. Yeah, that one I really recognize. So even like we're into our 8th year of marriage. So whenever I'm angry at him, I'm like, I always recall back the times that he does that, you know? Yes. And that helps a lot in the relationship.
Yeah, and we'll remind you as well.
Yes.
I hear the word tantrums a lot, Dr. Chern. Is that something that children with or people with CP experience a lot? And is there a reason for that?
The tantrum?
Yes.
Because the thing is that for children, they... Sometimes, because as I told you before, the children with CP will have other associated things. And some of them actually have a normal intelligence. It's just maybe because of the motor control that they can't speak, they can't express. Then you will just have to find ways for them to communicate. Mm-hmm. And then get your sentence and then those things. Because sometimes the kids have a hearing impairment, mm-hmm. that they can't hear. So no matter what you talk in front of them, they want to express to you also, they will not know. They just know that they're hungry, they are constipated, they are having pain. Of course, mm-hmm. they have tantrum. Mm-hmm. Then they have not having enough sleep, and then you force me to go to the therapy, and say, I'm tired, and then that people is stretching it, it's so painful, I can't say. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's tantrum. But it's just we have to find a way to let them communicate and express.
It's just their way of communicating.
Yeah, and you have a lot. You have to find out why is they having the tantrum. Yeah.
Does CP get worse when a child grows older?
The brain insult, no. But the physical condition, there might be.
Especially if there's no therapy.
Yeah, if there's no therapy.
It's like exercise.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Because it will, the muscle will waste away if there's no frequent therapy.
So, and does it affect life expectancy?
No, it will not really affect the life expectancy for the muscles, the muscular, what we call the musculoskeletal complication. But like other things like Hannah had a swallowing problem that she cannot feed. Mm. But if you don't do anything about it, and then you might that the, when you drink the milk and then it causes it going to the lungs and have pneumonia, then it will have affect the life expectancy. And if you don't having enough nutrition, of course, you will be like, easily to get infection, very immunocompromised. And of course, you'll get a shorter life. But like seizure, the epilepsy, if you don't take medication, you have a prolonged seizure, reduce our oxygen to your brain, then of course, you affect the outcome, the clinical presentation, because it's not just the pure initial insult.
Yeah.
Then you have further insult. Then all those will actually add on to reducing the life expectancy. But normally, at this time, at a so good healthcare system, the CP child, if well taken care of, should have more or less the same life expectancy like us. Most of them.
Sarini, I fail to ask, how is Hannah's movements, how badly is it impaired?
Right now, how she's mobile, she crawls around in order to be mobile. Before this, she was initially diagnosed with quadriplegia, cerebral palsy, which affects four limbs. But now that her upper body is almost normal, only her lower, her legs are affected. So now she's diplegic. She can move, she can walk with her spleen or her FOs, AFOs. She could climb furniture. I would say... if not for her 13-year-old body, she will physically, she's like an 11-month-old. You know, she's exploring stuff and she's grabbing stuff from the table and she's trying to
cruise around.
Cruise, yeah, using furniture. She even cruises on the stairs. She tries to. So
that must be painful.
For her?
Yeah, on the cruising on the stairs.
She could maneuver herself. So
yeah. You compromise. I suppose learn how to.
Yeah.
There's something called physiotherapy. There's also something called occupational therapy. What is the difference, Dr.
Chen? Therapies try to improve the life or functions of a person with the disability. Physiotherapy more onto the gross motor, like the movement of the joints, the limb, the walking, the crawlings. And occupational therapy is more onto the fine motors, like your hand function and how your activities of daily living, how you feed, how you act. But both also need a lot of muscle control. So it's like sometimes you see things like you went to physios and then you went to occupational therapists, they are doing the same thing, but the outcome is actually for you to able to function, you know, but just a very small distinction, because when you want to get the things also you need to walk, but physios is more on the walking and occupational therapy is on to getting the things.
Right. Okay. So, all right. So completing the task. So it's what I'm hearing is it's all about retaining muscle function or working on muscle function. Is that true for CP?
For CP, because
whether it's it involves muscles when you swallow, whether it involves muscles in terms of movement, it all involves muscles.
Because the insult is actually at the brain that control the motor movement, the muscle movement. So when we talk, when we swallow, it's also a muscle movement. Mm. But we just do it so automatically that we don't really realize. But when the control is off, like your electric box that is starting to have a short circuit, or a computer that suddenly have a short circuit and then it all go haywire. And then when you want to recover, you want to receive. So it's a bit hard for them. So it's basically a control of the motor power. And associated with it, like your eye movement also, you are using your muscle. Swallowing, the breathing, the movement, which we so take it for granted.
You do. And does that mean that there are no oral medications involved for anybody who has CP, or do some patients have to take, or some individuals have to take oral medication as well?
Medication depends on what is the condition. If you've got a seizure, epilepsy, then you need to take anti-epileptic drug, because it's very important to control the epilepsy. If you don't control it, you have an attack that is long, you actually can cause a further insult to your brain, and then you cause it to be more deteriorate. And then there is a medicine for control of the muscle, because when you are very stiff, you can't move. When you want to do physical therapies or anything, it will be cause pain. So we have a what we call a muscle relaxant or antispastic medication to relax the muscle. And it can be either be oral, means that you eat it, either in a pill form or syrup forms, and then you have injection, like a focal injection of botulinum toxin injection. We are not doing for facial aesthetic.
I know, everybody thinks Botox is only for looking beautiful.
No, but this one is to relax the muscle so that you can actually move.
But is that temporary or?
It's a temporary. Okay. But normally with a Botox injection, we will need to actually complement and get everything in place, like the therapy, the spleens to be in place. And they have to be very goal specific, because the dosage of the medication is actually based on the body weight. And most of our cerebral palsy kids are very light. So then you have to be very selective. What are the muscles that you choose? Because botulinum toxin injection is only affect the site that you inject. So you need to know what is the clear aim that you want to do the injection. And children do not like injections.
No, I'm sure. Who likes injections? Even I don't.
Another therapy that we are actually looking into is actually intrathecal baclofen therapy. It's a continuous pump infusion of medication to the intrathecal space, which is at the, from your backbone.
I see.
So you use a very low dose and then you can control a very severe spasticity.
Okay. And but that's depending case by case basis.
Yeah, it's independent case by case.
Surgery, is that an option at all?
it all depends on what is the indication for surgery. If we don't intervene early, like the kids have a hip dislocation because of the muscle, then you have pain that you cannot, then it might have to go for option for surgery. Or as a child grow, it will be like more crouch, that you're blending the knee like old people walk because of the muscle tightness and the contraction, then it will affect, cause more difficulty to walk. Then surgical intervention might be an option. But do bear in mind, you have to pair it with rehab before the surgery and after the surgery to get a good outcome. We have kids that at the age of teenager, because of the crouch gait and difficulty to walk, they decided to go for the surgery. So before surgery, we strengthen the muscle. We make sure that they have a good posture, everything. And after the surgery, we have an intensive rehab, which takes up to months. It's really long. And a lot of hard work from the child and the family members to be committed to get it back.
Cheras Rehab Hospital has been referred to as a hospital in the park. I've not been there. Why is it known as, a hospital in the park?
It actually was built with a concept of eco concepts. Like, so you have enough lighting and then eco-friendly. And it's actually just a two-story, double-story. And it's the middle of the city. And you've got a lot of greenery because you want to provide a calm and peaceful. And want the patients to actually feel it, that they are actually doing calm and peaceful, and it's sort of a therapeutic effect as well, so that you will not feel like you are in a hospital. Most of the people would like that. And then it provide you a lot of opportunity to walk and exercise.
Okay, which, you know, everybody needs. Not just people with CP. rest assured, I mean, and just to reiterate that the Cheras Rehab Centre is a government initiative. Yeah. You will need a referral letter to actually go and seek help. And you need a strong referral letter, as Dr. Chen had mentioned. As much information that you provide as possible will help them decide on a way forward for either your child or, you know, whoever with CP. Sereni, you want to just share with me, what are your hopes for Hannah's future?
To really be independent, that's first on the list. Hence why her multitude of therapies. And really, a financial plan for her to rely on when I'm not around anymore. So that's number two. Because she will have to have some kind of financial support to, you know, in order to continue having her caregiver there for her and things like that. I mean, I know she has sisters, but I wouldn't want to impose that on them because I don't think that's fair. So hence why we have this kind of plan
in place. Okay. Do you have advice for parents who have children who are affected by CP?
Yes. Okay. So for the child themselves, try and find alternative forms of healing as much as possible, because the multidisciplinary approach really helps in terms of making the condition a lot better. Make sure that the child is always included in any typical child's activity, you know, like arts and crafts, going to the park, going for club kind of activities, you know. What's most important is have regular therapy in place, because without that, the muscles will waste, and that will not help anybody at all. For the parents, find a support group and a support system, because without that, you'll just go insane.
Is there a support group?
There's a lot of support groups, actually, a lot of NGOs out there. Some of them, there's one called GAPS, G-A-P-S. One is MyCP, and another one is NECIC, N-E-C-I-C. They are NGOs of parents with special needs kids, especially kids with cerebral palsy. So you can contact them. I think they have Facebook pages. And then for the parent themselves, I know sometimes it's almost next to impossible, but do take breaks. Even in Australia, they have like a respite system in place where the child can be taken to a respite center for the caregivers to just chill and take a break from the daily caregiving, because I think that's really important. And then you have to be ready to go on a personal growth journey, because I wasn't this last time. You know, like, there's a lot of self-reflections that need to be made, you know, a lot of meditations. I take up yoga as well in order to center myself. A lot of caring for yourself first. I mean, you have to keep your cup full first before you even can take care of your child. And lastly, have faith. Because a lot of the time, when doctors come to you and say, cerebral palsy is not curable, you know, you're going to be like that for life, it kind of like dampens your spirit. But really, to have faith that things will turn out better for the kid is something that you must have.
Dr. Chen, your advice?
I totally agree with Serena, because I think that you need to actually include the kids in everything, and don't build your house into a mini hospital.
Oh, yes.
That one is, I tell you, what we try to help as a medical professionals is to give you options and discuss with you. Because I always believe that whatever in textbook doesn't apply to everyone. You really, really need to know what is your priority. And when we will give you advice what to look at the future, not now. Because you need to anticipate later. And I really like, wow, she thinks about everything.
She has.
And that are the things that we're trying our best to tell the parents. A lot of parents still don't think about the future. We don't want them to, like, by the time the child is 18. I saw a news last time. The father killed the child. Yes, because he don't want the child to suffer when he die. So it was so sad. I don't want things to happen like that. I think that is something that we need to ingrain. Give the child a chance to be independent, to show you that he can do something. Not all child with CP cannot do anything. Just need to find that small little things. And I really don't like to hear that parents told me, doctor, I come today because that doctor tell me, I don't know what to do for you already. You go to rehab, maybe they can do something for you. That is not true. There's always something. We cannot improve the child. We cannot cure the child. But we can help to improve the quality of life, even a little bit. Not all. You just need to have the faith. And you have to find the correct ways. What are the things? Don't expect. The other child is not. Every child are not same. So you cannot expect that the child improve or my child not improve. Why I don't have? You have to be patient. Usually it's not the time yet, or there are other things that are causing it. So you have to talk. I say we talk a lot. And then our consultation is like, can take out long. And this is not one day, 2 days thing. So you need to have faith in yourself and the doctors and the team. Anything you need to tell us. You don't tell us, coming for 5 minutes or 1 hour consultation, we will not know what happened. Sometimes the child can perform very well in the hospital, but at home, why can't? So you need to tell us, because practice makes perfect. You need to practice at home also. So we try to give you opportunity to get the child opportunity to do so, and for you to relax. I do totally agree about respite care, even though we can't afford to do so at this moment. Because I think
if the government is listening, please have a respite care centre. Yes.
Shout even louder.
Thank you.
Dr. Chen, thank you for your passion. My goodness me, so passionate about the work that you do for children with CP. And Sereni, thank you for sharing your story with us. That was Dr. Chen Pei Ming, from a rehab physician from Churras Rehabilitation Hospital, and Sereni Bujang sharing her journey of 13-year-old Hannah who has cerebral palsy on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.